If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
Everybody that I went and spoke with that had owned 100 homes plus, some 200-300 homes, you ask them today how many you own, they're like, well, maybe 20, maybe none.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Drew Joyner is from Memphis, Tennessee, and holds both his undergraduate and MBA from the University of Memphis. After 9 years in the U.S. Army, he now works his day job as an outside sales rep and invests in both residential and now commercial real estate. He is a husband and father of two boys. Without further ado, Drew Joyner, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Sam. Glad to be here.
Hey, man. So glad to have you. I guess, we really want to dive into today, your real estate story and how you scaled. Can you kind of give us some ideas on how this occurred?
Yeah, sure. So I followed the path that a lot of investors did. I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad when I was a freshman in college. I bought a rental home a few years later. That experience turned out to be great. And then roughly 10 years after that, I got more serious and started pursuing more single family residential homes. Did that for a handful of years and ultimately transitioned into larger assets, which what we're going to talk about today. But effectively from 2014 to 2018 is when we really started to step on the gas buying single family residential. We went from a couple of homes I had at that time up to 20 properties. We had maybe three or four duplexes in there and a fourplex. So 26 units, 20 properties. And I just found myself thinking there's got to be a smarter way, an easier way than just like crushing myself, buying these homes, rehabbing them, put a tenant in there, making sure the property manager is doing their job. And so a couple of years ago, I started, really going around interviewing bigger investors. People have been doing it a lot longer, a lot smarter, with a lot bigger funds at stake. And so through that process of going and talking with these folks, I just thought, let's try something different, because this process of buying a home once a month, rehabbing it, making sure it gets rented, and then the cash flow starts was just, you can imagine it's laborious. And so everybody that I went and spoke with that had owned 100 homes plus, some 200-300 homes, you ask them today how many you own, they're like, well, maybe 20, maybe none. So they all had moved out of that, generally speaking, for anyone that I spoke with. And just that alone speaks volumes. It's like, wow, if it was that lucrative, why didn't they stay in it? Why didn't they just start doing this other thing? And the general synopsis of my interviews through that time was just, this is an easier way to do what you're doing. Less hassle, better cash flow, more stable cash flow. And so we tried that, and here we are a couple of years down the road, and it's turning out to be the case.
Right. So what asset class are you currently investing in then?
So we still have a few single family residentials, three in fact, a couple of duplexes and a single family home. So we've sold the 20 properties down to three. Wow. And we took that and we bought, our first commercial purchase was an industrial flex center, 20,000 square feet with three different units in there, long-term tenants, stable asset, cash flowing. So it's a mixture of industrial and retail, that flex space. A year later, we bought more of a retail center, although many retail centers are used in somewhat of a flex capacity. For example, in our retail center, a church is in one of the bays, and then a State Farm guy, and then a Pizza Hut, and then a graphic design company. So good, healthy mixture. It's more of a neighborhood center here in the suburbs of Bartlett. And then earlier this year, we purchased an industrial building. So between industrial, retail, flex, purely retail, and then more purely industrial, it makes up our commercial holdings at this point.
Right. Okay. Aside from being exceptionally smart, how did you educate yourself on this particular asset class? I mean, most people don't just make that jump from one day going, hey man, I'm buying single family houses to, oh look, I now want to get involved in industrial. I mean, I wouldn't know the first thing about industrial. So how did you scale up in that regard in order to make
well,
that?
Well, I wish I could say that I was always the smartest guy in the room, but Lord knows that's not the case. I am a person, though, that is constantly trying to find a better way to do something. Sure. And in 2017, we bought one house a month, like I mentioned previously. And I was just like, man, I'm working my day job. I'm doing this on top of all that. I was just like, there's got to be a smarter way. So that's when I set out to interview and take folks to lunch and just pick their brain. Guys have been doing this a long time that own millions and millions of dollars in assets, and just ask them, okay, you did this. Why don't you do this? If this is so lucrative, why don't you do this now? And the short answer was, well, it's just easier to own 10 large assets versus owning 100 small ones.
Right.
And so I was like, okay, well, I can't necessarily just go plop down $100,000 on a $1 million property tomorrow. So how did you do that? And inevitably the feedback was, well, I started selling our residential portfolio down and moving the equity into fewer, larger assets. So it just is the game of Monopoly. It is exactly the game of Monopoly. So through that process of just interviewing people that I got to know a little bit and trusted their feedback, you know, it gave me the confidence to try one of these deals. And after owning it, not even 6 months, I was like, wow, this is so much easier. Owning this one property, our first commercial purchase, was the size in dollars of all 20 of our single family homes.
Wow.
And I was working, no lie, I mean, an hour a month on that one property.
Wow.
Whereas the 20 homes are requiring constant attention from the property manager to capital issues. I mean, I didn't manage the single family homes, which is a lesson learned, but I could easily manage the commercial properties. And right. So it eliminates the property manager. And of course, we know nobody takes care of your stuff the way that you do. And so interviewing those investors, getting their feedback, and then owning one for 6 months, it was like a light bulb went off for me.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So I'd like to unpackage a little bit more of this. It sounds like you went to people that already knew the business and said, hey, help me figure out how to invest in whatever asset class it is that you now obviously scaled into. Is that right? So I guess that's lesson one. That's how you scaled. You found somebody.
And they had been, all of those guys had been there, done that. They had done the 50 residential homes, 100, some of these guys, 300 homes.
Right.
And then just the fact that, okay, well, do you own those 300 anymore? That question alone, and they say, well, no, I don't have any, or I have 20, speaks volumes.
Right. Right. Okay. So first thing you did, you went out and found people already doing it. And why were these guys willing to share with you? Like, I mean, did you know them? Did you just happen to, you know,
man, you will be surprised what you can get out of people by offering to buy them lunch. It is the cheapest ROI on education and experience that anyone will ever get. So I'm an outside sales guy in my W-2 day job. And, you know, part of my deal is just get people talking, take them to lunch, pick their brain, find out what challenges they have, and so you can offer a solution. And so with these guys, I just do the same thing I always do. Just, hey, look, I'm young, growing in this world, not as experienced as you. Love to buy you lunch and just pick your brain and see what I can learn from you. You got a lot of knowledge. Been doing this a long time. I just like to glean a little bit from you. And people respond well to that. People generally are able and willing to share, you know, the road that they've been down, what they've learned, what's worked well, what hasn't. I haven't found that most people are just a closed book and they don't want to talk to you.
Sure, sure. That's awesome. That's a phenomenal piece of advice. First off, find somebody you can learn from that wants to share with you. Secondly, it sounds like from there, you were able to obviously go out and find a deal. For most investors, even if they gain the rudimentary knowledge to look at a deal, they don't necessarily know, they don't have the deal flow coming their way. So what was your next step in scaling? Obviously, I think you said you were going to sell some of your houses off. Did you do that at the same time, or did you buy your next asset and then sell
it? I didn't. No, I bought that first commercial asset and we hadn't really started selling off the 20 single family homes. However, my experience in that one is what further encouraged me to sell those and roll the proceeds more into commercial.
Right.
And so trading the 4 greenhouses for the red hotel.
Right.
Just like Monopoly. And right. So my experience there was what gave me confidence. But I think your question is more, how did I find that? The first commercial purchase actually came from one of these interviews with one of these investors. He had a property. He had almost fully depreciated. So in terms of what he was getting from a tax benefit perspective, it was done. He had fully juiced it. He was still getting great cash flow from it. And so he was willing to sell it and, you know, do a 1031 trade up to something better that he could start the clock over on depreciation.
Right. So that deal kind of came to you from that source. What are some other tools? So now we've known, obviously, to reach out to those who are doing already in the business and maybe they want to go something bigger. What are some other tools maybe that you're using right now that are kind of helping you look to the next level?
Well, when it comes to actual tools and resources, it's primarily just me and a spreadsheet there. So I'm not doing much online with, you know, different platform, commercial real estate platforms or whatnot that help investors with information. I'm mainly just networking like this. Talking to people that are in the business, getting to know brokers, going to eat lunch with them. And, you know, that I've found a lot of our success just comes through that, just networking and getting to know people. People want to do business with people they know and like. And when you mention, hey, I've got a 1031 coming up from selling these five houses that I need to roll into something, you know, that stays in the front of their mind. And when they get another deal that's the size of what you're needing, you know, you kind of, you pop up as an early person who would take that down.
Gotcha. So you still have a few single family housing, you said a couple duplex and a quadplex or something to that effect. Mm-hmm. Do you plan on holding on to those or are those on the chopping block here soon as well?
Yeah. So those three, I think we will hold on to. The area that is that where they sit, all three of those sit in the same area, is gentrifying and it's really coming back. There's some big investment dollars going in there, not only from private investors, but from the city over the next 5 years. Right. And so I'm really expecting a big appreciation bump on those. So I don't think it's the time to sell those. But they're also some of my best properties from a cash flow perspective. So I don't mind keeping them.
Right. Yeah. If that's not costing you time and money, then hang on to them. What when I say the word scale up from where you are right now, because now you've got some awesome commercial assets, and I would imagine that you're looking to grow your portfolio even beyond where it is right now. Is that right? Mm-hmm. So what does that look like for you? And what, when you see the future, what do you think of? Like what is Drew Joyner saying, man, I want scale on my real estate business. What does that look like?
So something that I'm running into now, it's kind of a new challenge, is you get to a point where you sold off your previous assets that you grew into. You rolled all that equity over. And now you have this new problem of, okay, well, I've used all my cash, but I don't have enough cash to buy the next thing. And so what we've done all this time up until this point is we've lived relatively below our means. It's just me that works in our family. My wife stays here and she works in the home and takes care of our boys and everything here. And so we live off of approximately 60 to 70% of my income and we roll the rest in. The other thing we do is we roll all the cash flow back into the business constantly. So we've never taken a paycheck from that. But ultimately, you still hit a wall. It's like, okay, well, if I project this out, the margin from my day job and then all of the cash flow from the businesses, you find yourself saying, well, I have to wait a year to buy the next thing.
Right.
So the challenge that I'm trying to overcome now is what to do next. And I don't know if that's leveraging other assets, you know, like these homes that are free and clear that I'm not really excited about doing, or if that's syndicating a deal or, you know, working with a private investor on something. That's a new problem. You're always solving a new problem, no matter what rung of the ladder you're on. But that's my new problem of how to solve that issue.
Gotcha. So do you want to stay in the same asset class you're in, or do you see yourself venturing off into another asset class, or where does that?
So I looked at multifamily, and quite frankly, I didn't buy the hype that everyone else had over it, especially from like 2016 to 2019.
Right.
And COVID honestly has exposed some of the weaknesses of that, especially in certain areas where like entire complexes strike together because they live close to one another. Whereas like a guy who owns 30 single family homes is never going to have to worry about all those colluding against him. And so that was one issue, but I also didn't buy that it was just like 10 times less work simply because they're all in one area.
Right.
I did interview a bunch of multifamily investors, and the general consensus was it's just that you're driving to the same spot for those problems. It's not like all those problems don't exist that I had with our homes. You're just all going to one corner. So I liked that point, but it just felt like more of the same to me. So I don't think we're that interested in multifamily. I think that we'll go after more industrial, flex, and then retail. Mm-hmm. I know that retail gets spoken of in bad light these days because of what online shopping is doing to retail, but there are so many businesses that, you know, one of our tenants is a Pizza Hut. I mean, online shopping is not going to eliminate the need for that neighborhood Pizza Hut. Same with the church that's in one of our places. You're not going to do just church completely online one day. So we're going to continue to pursue those types of assets. And I think that we'll likely get back into single family as a way to create more margin to move towards commercial. Because, you know, you and I spoke when we first met, you still run into that problem of you run out of, you know, capital available for down payment eventually.
Right.
And so you got to do something to generate that. And so those are the things we'll figure out. But I think our experience with industrial, flex, and retail has been great so far.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. That anytime you can, you know, have a plan to say, hey, this is where we want to go. That's great. What are some key lessons, either mistakes or things you got right along the way that you could share? I guess you kind of shared more your key things you did right, I guess, maybe was meeting with the brokers and meeting with guys in the space. But what are some hard knocks you've taken on the road to scaling that, you know, you could help the rest of us avoid perhaps?
Yeah. So in 2014, I bought our first house in a less than desirable area. We'll call it a Class C, D marginal. And what's so attractive about that is when you look at these things on a spreadsheet, the ROI is through the roof compared to like a B or A area. And you're thinking, well, this is great. And so I had owned a rental house in an A type area, but I'd also had rough experiences because the wrong tenant went in there. And I just thought, well, if I'm going to have those anyways, I might as well like go for this much higher yield.
Right.
That was a mistake. I learned by selling that house and buying three houses in this less desirable area that the market of tenant is still much better in that better area, even though you can have bad experiences. The overall median, the average, is still much higher than those three cheaper homes. So we went into there and I was thinking, okay, great. My first one was a success. It was cash flowing fine. And I thought, well, all the rest of them are going to be just the same. So I, you know, poured gas on a fire and started buying them like, you know, really quickly, one a quarter for maybe 15, 16, and then one a month and 17. You get down the road and then you're like, man, only half of this portfolio is performing. Why? And you just find out that the market of tenants in these areas isn't as stable from a income perspective. The other thing is that these homes are generally older in areas like this, and they need more maintenance. And so unless you just go in and touch everything from the onset, full rehab and spend a ton of money and find yourself, you're into the house for more than it's worth, you know, these things are just going to have wear and tear. And you couple that with the way that these types of tenants maintain the home or abuse the home, however you want to say it, it just is kind of a recipe for a roller coaster of income or loss, cash flow. Mm-hmm. So I found that the consistency in cash flow was really volatile in those areas. But having said that, when we sold those to other investors and rolled the proceeds into other things, I mean, we made money on all of those houses. Mm-hmm. Some we may have only made $1,000 or broke even, worst case. But we made money by and large on all those, and we wouldn't be in some of the assets today had we not had that equity, you know, gain that we were able to roll over. So it's kind of a lesson learned for sure. They're not great for long-term holds, but they were great for like a, you know, we'll call it a long-term flip. Buy it 1 year, get it stabilized, the next year sell it kind of thing to another investor.
Gotcha. How has that mistake, we'll call it a mistake, not even a mistake, but lesson learned, guided your current acquisitions? Like, do you look at the industrial flex differently, you know, in different areas now because of that lesson learned in the single family side?
Yes, in ways. Certainly, I'm much more in tune with the areas and the type of tenant. But we're dealing with businesses versus just a residential tenant just needs a place to live.
Right.
Generally speaking, a residential tenant can just do whatever they want to. The law is kind of in their favor. They can stop paying you. they'll move on. Maybe they have a ding on like their references, but somebody will rent to them and there's really no repercussions. Whereas a business, you know, that does mom and pop, that does food service or whatever they do, a church, they can't afford to just move with the wind like a tenant in a home can. They need stability. And furthermore, it comes down to the issue of responsibility. If you're a business owner, largely just the fact, just the nature that you own a business means that you're more responsible than some of your peers. And so what I've found on the commercial side is that these people are not willing to play games with payments. They're usually not willing to play games with not maintaining their space because right. their business and their income, the way they put food on their table and a roof over their head depends on that.
Right.
And so I have found that that is just much easier to manage when you're dealing with managing a business owner, entrepreneur versus a tenant who rents a $700 a month, you know, place.
Right. So yeah, I guess if we summarize this in the scale up process for you, it's find quality tenants that have skin in the game where it matters to them to pay if they do or don't pay their rent, because that's how they put food on their table. So you want to kind of focus on that asset class. You like to focus on bigger assets. You like to focus on fewer tenants and really to get out and just network with brokers and dealers and people like that in the business. Is that kind of a quick synopsis of what it is?
It is. It is. And it's just, I keep coming back to the analogy, but it is absolutely the game of Monopoly. What can we do that gets the most reward for the least amount of headache? And this is what I've learned through that process. I'm totally willing to deal with those headaches, but you know, I want to, what's the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow? You know, it's like, what's the end game? You know, one day in the future, I want to just respond to an email, you know, once or twice a day, if I have to, I'll answer the phone. But everybody's, you know, dream scenario is not to go work for 14 hours a day. You know, answering leaking roof calls and plumbing issues and all that. Everybody wants to do what they want to do. And for us, that's, you know, spend time with family, with our boys, with our friends, go to the beach like we're doing next week. And so we're working through that process. And so far, we haven't been burned too bad on any one deal. We've certainly taken our licks, but this has been our road through this idea of scaling up. And we've been fortunate with it. We really have.
That's awesome. Drew, if our guests want to get in contact with you or learn more about you, what's the best way to do that?
So I don't have much of an online or social media presence, but my email address is drew.joiner84@gmail. And that's Joiner with a Y, drew.joiner84@gmail. Email me. I love to give back. So if anybody wants to do exactly what I've done in terms of just having lunch someday, I'll share with you more of my story, answer any questions that I can shed light on. More than willing to do that.
Awesome. Hey, Drew, thanks again for your time today and for coming on. Appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.